Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am Yada. We're here with IQ Al-Rasuli, the foremost expert in the world on the religion of Islam, one of the brightest people I have ever encountered, a man of great compassion and tremendous courage. He is also the author of Lifting the Veil, The True Faces of Muhammad and Islam. IQ, it's good to have you.
Thank you for having me.
I read a story yesterday that is so consistent with what I find in Islam, but I want to just share the beginning of the story and get your comments. It begins, an Afghan appeals court has quashed the death sentences imposed on four men for their part in the mob killing of a young woman in Kabul in March. This woman was attacked at an Islamic shrine after being falsely accused of burning a copy of the Quran. I think the story, if I recall correctly, the imam at the mosque wanted to rape her. And when she refused to be raped by him consensually, if you will, he accused her of burning a copy of the Quran, which she had not done. She was stoned to death. And then after she was stoned to death, her body was run over by a car. And then to complete the job, they set her on fire. Now, the court also acquitted, said, you know, you're just not guilty, this person who set this whole thing up by falsely accusing this woman of burning the Quran. I mean, to me, what I read there and how this woman was originally treated, which would only happen in a country infected by Islam, but then how this court went about exonerating the man who caused all of this and then mitigating the sentences of those who participated in stoning her, running her over with a car, and burning her.
I'm not shocked. I'm not shocked. This is Sharia. Under Sharia, a female, whether she is Muslim or non-Muslim, any female is one little step higher than the domestic animal. What does that mean? What do you do with domestic animals? You can butcher them if you wanted to. You can rape them if you wanted to. They are of no
value. Bestiality is okay in Islam, as a matter of fact.
Of course.
So, you know, it's not just that the female of the human species in Islam is a notch above the domestic animal. I'm not sure she is a notch above, because the Quran doesn't establish her as a notch above. The Quran and Hadith speak of her as being a domestic animal. And in Islam, you can have sex with an animal, just as you can have sex with the animal that you would call a woman.
True, but I mean, I'm not shocked at this. I really am not. Yes. I mean, they couldn't, in all consciousness, accuse the imam.
Yeah, I don't know what the rules are. They are also
imams themselves.
Right, I don't know what the rules are.
The imam is not guilty.
Right.
All the other four were not guilty. They were just doing what Sharia.
Right.
No dictate.
Yeah, this man falsely accused a woman that he was trying to abuse of burning a Quran, and did so knowing that this would be the consequence, and he was acquitted.
By the way, so I don't know if anybody is listening. Yeah. There were no witnesses to the burning of the Quran.
No. In fact, it's been shown that there was no Quran burned. That he absolutely lied, and that he lied because the woman refused sex with him.
Well, it happens again and again every single day in every Muslim country for the last 40 years.
It does. Yeah. The only reason we know about this is because there's still Western media in Afghanistan, because the U.S. invaded it, and there's a little enclave for the Western media, and it's still following it because the West still has troops there. If the West didn't have troops there, we wouldn't even know about it.
You wouldn't. No. Nobody would. No. In fact, the tragedy is this. Although Americans know about it, although Europeans know about it, they say nothing and do nothing.
Of course. Yeah, in fact, they make excuses for the religion under the coexist tolerance concept of prohibiting hate speech. In the United States, IQ, you can go to jail and for a long period of time if you maltreat an animal. You know, Michael Vick's the most famous story here, the football quarterback. He trained dogs to fight, and he was sent off to jail for a number of years. It is a crime in America to abuse an animal, to strike an animal. In Islam, though, you can beat your wife, can't you? You can beat any woman.
You can beat her and you can rape her. This is very important. People understand this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. In fact, if you rape her, you're exonerated and she's found guilty of adultery.
Yeah, no, but I mean by rape. Rape means when the woman is not willing to have sex for whatever reason.
Right.
This is rape. It doesn't matter if it's her husband or not.
Right. And the Quran specifically says that sex with slaves is okay. A sex with slave is rape.
Yeah, but that's also rape.
Right. That's right. That's the Quran. The Quran legitimizes rape, just as it legitimizes stealing and killing and lying. The Quran legitimizes, authorizes lying, stealing, coveting, rape, adultery, murder, all of those things.
Correct. That is exactly why the people in the prison systems in Europe, the men in the prison system in America, convert to Islam. Because the Quran is music to their ear. They are in prison because they raped, murdered, plundered, or did something like that. And the Quran says, yes, men, you are justified to do that for as long as you are Muslims.
As a matter of fact, the most heinous of behaviors, which is pedophilia, according to Islam, pedophilia is not only acceptable, it is desirable.
This is why most men in Islam would rather marry a girl of nine. We don't really marry her. He's going to rape her.
Yeah. There's no concept of marriage in Islam. Not in the sense that we know it in the West. That concept does not exist in Islam. And rather than use the term marriage in Islam, we should really use the term own for the purpose of abusing. But own.
Well, I would rather use rape. Because no matter what, how you look at it, this male Muslim is raping the female because she is not consenting to what he's doing.
No. And matter of fact, the female has no choice in the marriage. She has no choice whatsoever in entering into it. She has no options when she's into it. The husband, man, has complete and utter control over her. He can beat her, he can starve her, he can leave her naked all the time. He can preclude her from ever leaving his domicile without him, like in the laws in Saudi Arabia. He has absolute control. He owns her. She is his property. But the thing that I think we do a disservice to our listeners is when we equate women in Islam to domesticated animals, that really is unfair. It's not right. A woman in Islam has fewer rights by a huge margin than a domesticated animal has in a Western culture.
How do you mean?
Because in a Western culture, you can't beat, you can't savagely mistreat a domesticated animal. If you deliberately starve a domesticated animal, you're going to jail in a Western community. Can you beat, can you starve a woman in an Islamic society and suffer no consequences?
Yeah, but this is a great difference between us non-Muslims and Muslims.
Right.
In non-Muslim society, if you mistreat an animal, you go
of
to
course.
Prison. In Islam, it doesn't matter who you mistreat, whether it's an animal, a female, or even another human being.
So,
being is not a Muslim.
Right.
You
so, which would you?
Them,
which,
you can burn them. You can drown them. You can cut them to ribbons.
Right. So, the difference between what I'm saying and what you're saying is there is no difference between it being a domesticated animal in an Islamic country and being a woman in an Islamic country.
Absolutely.
The point that I'm, and I agree with you, the point that I'm making is that if someone listening to us who is listening in a non-Islamic country, and we say that women are treated worse than domesticated animals, they equate the treatment of domesticated animals from a Western society. You can't have sex with a domesticated animal in a Western society. You'll go to jail for that. You can't deliberately starve a domesticated animal. You'll go to jail for that. You can't strike and beat a domesticated animal. You'll go to jail for that. And so from a Western perspective, the domesticated animal has far more rights than a Muslim woman does.
Absolutely true. 100% guaranteed, agreed. I couldn't afford that job. Now, yeah. Now I understand where you're coming from.
Yeah.
Because we are talking to Western minds,
right.
We put it in perspective. And the
right.
perspective is very simple. A woman in Islam is less than a domestic animal.
In the West.
In fact, I have known
right.
many times, but even in Iraq, in my country,
mm-hmm.
a man who has a horse,
right.
he would treat the horse infinitely better than his wife. Because you know what he would say? I can always change her.
Right. Exactly. In fact, in the Hadith, Muhammad was getting some pushback from you know, he had this in huge array of women and sex slaves and little children that were part of his harem, and he got some feedback from one of them that said, you know, the way you're treating us is inappropriate, and you continue to come up with these revelations that make it sound like your God is authorizing you to do so, and we know that it's absolutely nonsense. And so Abu Bakr was speaking to Muhammad and said, hey, you can beat her. She's nothing. The Quran has already established the fact that she's nothing. Women are plentiful. Replace her with another one. That's what the Hadith says.
The Hadith does that. Yes.
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 Yeah. It totally
the
dismisses
Quran that
women.
You're talking about was composed entirely by Muhammad.
Right. Right.
So
to associate Muhammad's
characteristics.
Right.
Put into the Quran, literally.
Right. Right.
Whatever he wanted, whatever he lusted for, whatever
right.
his depraved mind wanted, he created a revelation to suit that moment of time.
Yeah. And the problem with that is that Muhammad was among the most despicable humans who have ever lived. And so the kinds of things that the Quran authorizes are the kinds of things that a very sick, very perverted man would want. I have no interest in raping a woman, and yet the Quran authorizes it. I have no interest in an act of pedophilia, and yet Islam and Muhammad's hadith legitimize it. I have no interest in beating a woman, and yet the Quran authorizes it. I have no interest in demeaning people this way, and yet Muhammad did. And because Muhammad did, that's what Islam is based upon. This is a really powerful understanding. You know, you constantly reinforce the fact, IQ, that Muhammad was extremely perverted. Well, the Quran and Hadith are designed to satiate the lusts of an extremely perverted human. IQ, you discovered something that I thought was the most profound insight in the 1400 years that Islam has existed. You may not be the first person that's come up with this. You're the only person that I know of that has so succinctly deduced what Islam is at its heart. And you explained that Islam is a criminal enterprise. Full stop. That's really all that Islam is a criminal enterprise, with Muhammad as the godfather of the crime syndicate. And what you've said is legitimized by a review of the first 9 surahs of the Quran, and in particular a focus on the 8th surah, which is the first actual event of the Islamic era. But, you know, I think that there is something else that you have said in so many different ways that may be even more profound than that. And this is something maybe we both come to from different perspectives, but by this, using the same evidence. That the Quran and Hadith, the Sunnah, Sharia, all of Islam, is really nothing more than Muhammad's personal lust for sex, power, and money. But beyond that, it should not be just looked at as one man's quest to satiate his lust for sex, power, and money. Because Muhammad isn't an ordinary man. He is the most perverted man who's ever lived. He was sexually perverted. He was violently perverted. He was a repulsive individual from every possible perspective. And so what you get is a religion that is reprehensible no matter what perspective you're looking. Women, the treatment of women is just one aspect of Muhammad's perversity that spilled out into Islam.
Yeah. Dad, I'm so glad you corrected yourself. I'll tell you why. I was going to tell you, I respectfully disagree with your last statement before the break, that Muhammad was among the worst human beings ever. I was going to tell you, I would rather you had said that Muhammad was the most despicable, debauched, depraved, dissolute, immoral, unconscionable, and vile creature that ever soiled the face of this beautiful earth. No other creature is equal to him in history.
Yeah, and I have a couple of others that I put in the Muhammad class. Hadrian, I put in the Muhammad class, but you and I would have to talk about Hadrian for some time for you to have an appreciation as to why I put Hadrian in the same class. And I put Paul, the author of half the Christian New Testament, in that same class. And Paul is really, really extraordinarily similar to Muhammad. So the only reason I throw in the among the worst is because of that. Now I'm gonna grant you. So we don't get in. I mean, I don't mind disagreeing with you. I think when we disagree, it's actually enlightening because we don't disagree on very much. But I will grant you that if you look at the behavior of Muhammad, he was ever so slightly worse than Hadrian or Paul. It's just that the consequence of Muhammad didn't have as long-lasting and negative effect on humankind as did Hadrian or Paul.
But, we witnessed today, after 1,400 years, Muhammad's legacy.
Yes.
Everything in Islam is Muhammad's legacy.
100%.
Every single member of ISIS, Boko Haram, Hamas, and the others are actually clones of Muhammad. They're clones.
Right. Is that not true that Muhammad, when someone didn't celebrate the prostrations at the right time, didn't Muhammad tell them to go and burn them alive? And didn't Muhammad in his Quran say that if somebody is mischievous in any way, that you should crucify them? What happened under the control of the Islamic State when some men were found eating during the daylight hours of Ramadan? Didn't the Islamic State crucify them?
Yeah. They recently murdered two couples, a male and a female, in two kids. They accused them of sorcery.
Yeah.
How could they be sorcery in 21st century? I want to know.
Right. Yeah. When they cut off their heads. Doesn't the Quran order Muslims to smite people at the neck, cut off their heads?
Of course.
Right.
In chapter and verse, numerous cases in the Hadith, tons and tons of verses telling them, inciting the followers of Muhammad, justifying to the followers of Muhammad to slaughter anybody who's not a Muslim.
Well, actually, that's not even fair. They're supposed to slaughter everyone who is not a jihadi Muslim submitting to their specific authority. So that the Islamic State, it's declaring war against all apostate Muslims, which would be a peaceful, moderate Muslim, and all Shiite Muslims, in addition to all non-Muslims. IQ, when I did the research for Prophet of Doom, and I took a unique approach. What I wanted to do is, I'm a context guy. I don't think things are understandable outside of context. So what I read the Quran the first two or three times, and I said, this is a jumbled mess. There is no context. There's no topical context. There's no chronological context. This is a jumbled mess. It's, first of all, it's disgusting. But second of all, it's a jumbled mess. And then I was exposed to the Hadith, read about Muhammad and said, oh boy, that Quran sounds a lot like Muhammad. So for Prophet of Doom, what I did is simply I took the Hadith that were presented chronologically and I reordered the Quran based upon the chronology of the Hadith so I could put it into the context of Muhammad's life. And the conclusion was irrefutable, absolutely overwhelming and undeniable, that the Quran and Hadith are nothing more than Muhammad's justification for his personal lust for sex, power, and money. And what I've come to just this moment, IQ, is in our discussion about domesticated animals and women, we agreed that in Islam, because that's what Islam says, that women are to be treated like domesticated animals. That's true only so far as it goes. You really need to understand the difference in how domesticated animals are treated in an Islamic country, where you can abuse them, beat them, starve them, and have sex with them, versus how they're treated in a Western country not infected with Islam. But this, to say that the Quran is nothing more than Muhammad's quest for sex, power, and money, and justifications for those things, and stealing those things, is inadequate, because you really need to understand how perverted Muhammad was.
Go ahead.
Well, I think pedophilia is pretty perverted. Was Muhammad engaged in pedophilia?
Yes.
I think rape is a bad thing. Was Muhammad a rapist?
A serial rapist, predator upon women.
Yeah. I think that that it is inappropriate to demean women, to strike them, to abuse them, to starve them, to lock them up, to treat them as slaves. Did Muhammad treat women this way?
Definitely.
I think it's inappropriate to engage in terrorist acts and to attack defenseless civilians. Was Muhammad a terrorist?
Every single day of his life after he moved to Medina, he was a terrorist and a cowardly one, because he always, always attacked people who were defenseless.
Yeah. I think it's inappropriate to steal what belongs to others. Did Muhammad steal?
100%. A robber. The premier pirate of the desert.
Yeah. Now, I also think that it's inappropriate to kidnap people. Was Muhammad a kidnapper?
Regularly.
I'm hugely opposed to enslaving people. Was Muhammad engaged in the slave trade? Did he enslave people and sell people as if they were property?
He had slaves even before he became so-called Muslim. And he continued slavery even after, up to his death anyway.
I think it's inappropriate to bear false witness, to tell people to have your word not be your bond, to lie to them and to deceive them. Does the Quran tell us that Muhammad disavowed his vows, his oaths?
Yes, he was a pathological liar. Yes. The Quran justified every single item Muhammad did, because Muhammad authored the Quran to justify his acts.
Yeah, I'm opposed to demonic spirits. I actually think there are such things as demons. They're fallen Moloch messengers, and that they do have the capacity to possess people, and that a person who is demon possessed would be someone that I would want to distance myself from. I view that as a negative. Did Muhammad admit to being demon possessed?
Yes. Encounter was demon possessed.
Yeah. And did he not, in his farewell sermon, say, tell us that not only his farewell sermon, did he reemphasize that women were property and they could be beaten and starved and locked in a closet naked, to whatever the man wanted to do, but to treat them as you would a domesticated animal in the Islamic sense. Didn't Muhammad also admit that he was that he had a jinn, which was a demon, attached to him, even in his farewell sermon?
Correct. But in his farewell sermon also, he said no two religions should exist in the peninsula of the Arabs, so he exterminated the Christians and the Jews.
Correct. So, I don't know if I've missed any heinous behaviors. I mean, we've talked of the slave trade, of kidnapping, of murder, I guess I didn't mention murder. Was Muhammad a mass murderer? I'm opposed to murder. I think murder is a bad thing. And mass murder is even worse than individual murder. Was Muhammad engaged in murder and mass murder?
Both of them. Yes. In one case, in the case of the Quraysh tribe, a peaceful tribe, 600 to 900 men and young men were slaughtered the same day in Medina.
Their heads were cut off, weren't they? They were bound and their heads were cut off.
Correct.
Now, some people have been so hoodwinked by propaganda and patriotism associated with the military, where they actually think that there are justifications for armies to go out to kill to allegedly protect a country. Did Muhammad ever engage another army, and did he ever attack anyone that was in the process of attacking him? was a single one of his
aggressed against people who were defenseless and unsuspecting of an attack.
So 100% of his attacks were against defenseless civilians for the purpose of robbing them and enslaving them. 100% of them, and never once did Muhammad engage in a military action against a an armed force that was desirous of attacking him.
Never.
Yeah. The closest you even get is two of the 75 raids that Muhammad engaged in. He was fighting against some civilians who only came to him because he had plundered them and raped them and robbed them and murdered them into oblivion. And in other words, their actions against him were strictly because they were in response to what he had done to them.
Every single one of these cases were exactly as you said. Most of these people were never suspecting to be attacked. And the Quran and the Hadith tell the reader that he attacked them to plunder them. Literally, that's what it says, to plunder them.
Right. So, in Muhammad, we have the worst case of mass murder. Totally unjustified mass murder. Can't be any worse. So, if the Quran is as we say, and the Hadith is as we say, which is nothing more than a representation of Muhammad's cravings, then these would be the cravings of the most despicable man who ever lived.
100%, yes.
So, by saying that they're the cravings
of Muhammad wants to do. This is, I'm intervening in the conversation.
Right. Yeah.
But ISIS is exactly what Muhammad did.
Right.
ISIS is the consummate Muslim entity, is ISIS. Mm-hmm. Boko Haram is the same. Hamas is the same. All those so-called terrorist organizations, which are all, of course, Islamic, are only emulating Muhammad.
Yeah. By the way, Hamas in Hebrew is the violent application of terror. Is the Hebrew word. It's kind of interesting. It's not how they get the acronym, but that's what it means. And there's one other thing I want to share with you. I never use ISIS, ever. I always use Islamic State. It is the Islamic State. We ought to know it's the Islamic State. They are stating Islam with every breath, with every deed they commit. And this idea that we're going to use an acronym that somehow disguises the fact that they are fundamentalist Muslims, I abhor. So I personally, the right term is the Islamic State. And they are, as you know, the best Muslims on the planet today.
Absolutely. No question about it. They are even better than Osama bin Laden ever was.
Right. Have they engaged in the sex trade?
Of course. 100%.
They've engaged in raping little girls, haven't they?
100%.
Are they willing to take a woman who is unarmed and to slice her head off?
They have done that.
Have they crucified individuals publicly?
Many times.
Have they burned people alive in their homes?
Yes, just like Muhammad intended to do.
Right. Did they commit acts of mass murder?
Well, of course, good God. In Iraq alone, in my country alone, mass murder on a scale unheard of.
Yeah. Have they engaged in kidnapping?
Again, correct.
Yeah. Is there any... They've engaged in pedophilia too, haven't they?
Of course.
Yeah. Have they stolen things that belong to others?
Every day.
They engage in armed robbery. So is there any difference between the things that they are doing and the things that Muhammad not only did, but justified?
But they can't be any other way. They are literally fulfilling not every word of the Quran, every letter of the Quran, every comma of the Quran, and every dot of the Quran, which is Muhammad.
How did it make you feel when you came out of Iraq? And you were given the opportunity to look at Islam from a calculating perspective and to recognize that your country had been slimed with such a despicable religion.
I was shocked. I really was shocked. But I'll tell you something.
Yeah.
in the first few weeks of my studies.
Uh-huh.
And there were not deep studies at the time. It was a comparison between what the Quran says about the Bible and what the Bible says about itself. In the first few weeks, I knew there was something catastrophically was wrong. Right. I knew that.
Yeah, let me share something. I'm going to change the terminology, because they're really, from Yahweh's perspective, who is the author of the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, there is no book called the Bible. It is the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. But the Quran claims that it confirms the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, and if you read the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, and you compare it to the Quran, which the Quran claims it confirms the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms, and it's the same God, what you find is absolute opposites, don't you?
100%. The God of the Bible, if you want to call it the Bible, always, the God of the Bible has 10 commandments. I'm not worried about it. I'm not interested in anything else. And Muhammad opposes every single one of the 10 commandments.
Yeah, doesn't the first announce that Yahweh is a God, and that if you have an allegiance to anyone other than Yahweh, that you are wholly separated from Him?
Of course. That's what Muhammad did. He separated himself from Yahweh.
Yeah. And in the second, doesn't Yahweh say, I don't want you around any kind of religious imagery. I don't want you bowing down in a religious setting. I don't want you worshiping. I don't want you being religious at all. What did Muhammad impose?
Idolatry. Pure idolatry.
Absolutely. And so Muhammad established a religion, and Yahweh in the second instruction says, don't be religious. In fact, Yahweh in the second one says that fathers corrupt their sons to the third and fourth generation by being religious. And isn't that exactly what Muhammad has done with Islam?
Yes, as slaves of Allah.
All right. In fact, Yahweh says, you want my mercy, Chanan, if you want my mercy, there's only one way to achieve my mercy, and it's available to thousands, is to observe Shamar, which is to carefully examine and thoughtfully consider the terms and conditions of my covenant. That's what he says, his mercy. Is the covenant something that Muhammad calls people to, or does he have no covenant?
No covenant.
Right.
Although the Muslims, they speak about covenant, he has no covenant.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. The terms and conditions of the covenant, you want to be part of the covenant. Yahweh has five terms and conditions. We spoke about them in the first hour. The first of those is you have to walk away from Babel. Babel is Babylon. You have to walk away from the very place that Islam now has as its capital. You have to walk away from the confusion of human religious institutions and from your country. And yet, doesn't Muhammad call people to religion, call them to the confusion of religion, call them to a national state?
Yes.
So the first condition of the covenant with Yahweh is the antithesis of what Muhammad did. The second is the second condition for the covenant is you have to trust and rely upon Yahweh. There is no Yahweh in Islam, right?
Yes, so, Islam has nothing to do with Yahweh.
Right.
Islam is the opposite of whatever Yahweh commanded.
Right, and now Yahweh, and the third thing that Yahweh says to be part of the covenant says you've got to walk to me and become perfect. The walk to Yahweh is described. There's only one walk in the entirety of the Torah. It begins with the doorway called Passover, through the welcome mat that is matzah that perfects, leading to Bekodim, which means firstborn children, and then to Shavuah, which is the promise of the Shabbat, to Teruah, which is announcing this message that we're just now talking about, through reconciliation, Yom Kippurim, and to Sukkah, we end up in Yahweh's home. That's the path to perfection. Is there any such path described in the Quran?
Not an iota. Not one.
In fact, there is no mention of any one of those steps in the path, is there?
No. And even God, the God of the Bible, is not called the name of the God of the Bible. It's called Allah.
Right. And Yahweh says quite clearly that I only have one name. And if you don't use and know my name, then you are engaging with a false God.
Absolutely right.
All right. He says, Yahweh makes it really clear, I only have one name. And if you use any other name in reference to me, you don't know me, and we don't have a relationship. Now, the next is that this whole covenant, by the way, is based on a family relationship, but the fourth condition of participating in the covenant is to closely examine and carefully consider the terms and conditions of the covenant. Not one of these conditions is ever mentioned in the Quran. As a matter of fact, the Quran is the antithesis of these, isn't it?
100% antithesis. Yes.
Right. By the way, does the Quran convey, you know, that the covenant is based upon the Hebrew word bereth, which is based upon the Hebrew letter and word bayath. Bayath means family and home. So the covenant is nothing more than being part of Yahweh's family.
Correct.
No, there is no concept of family. Yahweh, Allah is never presented as a heavenly father, is he?
Never. Allah right. is only a slave owner, a disgusting, murderous, bloodlusting slave owner.
Correct.
That's why they call themselves Muslims. We are the slaves of right. Allah. Yeah. If you are slaves of Allah, then there is no love between the two.
Yeah. So here you have the terms and conditions of the covenant, and none of that exists in Islam. And then in the third statement that Yahweh etched in stone, she says, "Do not, under any circumstances, diminish the importance of my name, because anyone," and he actually says his name is Yahweh, my name, and if he says, "Because if anybody diminishes the importance of," and misleads people to death as a result of diminishing the value of my name, I will not forgive them. Would the Quran be in wholesale defiance of that instruction?
Of course it is, because the word Allah is mentioned by every single Muslim, maybe literally, mm-hmm. 1,000 times a day.
Right.
Literally, right. 1,000 times a day.
And make no mistake, Allah is not the Arabic word for God.
No.
It is the name of one of Muhammad's gods.
Correct.
And in fact, it's not even the first name. It's the third name of the Quranic God. The first time the Quranic God is named, he is named Lord. Which, by the way, is the Lord is from the Hebrew Baal. And Baal, Lord, is the name of Satan. In the Torah, prophets, and Psalms. And Satan is called the Lord because lords want to own, they want to possess, they want to control. Fathers, Yahweh, has no interest in any of those things. Doesn't want to own, doesn't want to control, doesn't want to possess.
Yeah, but you're forgetting Allah does. He wants 20% of all the plunder.
Of course. And doesn't Allah refer to all of the victims of Islam as his slaves?
Absolutely.
So, Yahweh describes Satan as a lord who owns slaves, controls slaves, steals the labor of a slave. Allah is, as he is depicted in the Quran, is a perfect match for Yahweh's depiction of Satan, isn't he?
Correct.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, Satan's first name, and he's only named in one book. It's Isaiah Yashiah, and his name is Halal. Is the name Halal appear anywhere in Islam?
Halal, yes. Yeah.
Halal, yeah.
Yes.
In fact, it's written Halal. Yes. Does that name appear anywhere in Islam?
Yes, a lot.
Yeah. That's what's considered good in Islam, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Satan's name is considered
good in Islam.
Right, so Satan is considered good in Islam.
Correct. This is why Islam is so depraved. This is why Islam is the antithesis of every decent
right.
thing that a human
right.
being can strive for.
So when you read, when you realize that the Quran is trying to garner all of its credibility by claiming that it confirms the Torah, when in fact it contradicts the Torah in every possible way. Every possible way. Yes, you mentioned the conditions etched in stone. Take the fourth one. The fourth one is says, keep the seventh day, the Shabbat, separate. Does Islam celebrate the Shabbat?
Never. In fact, Muhammad, being stupid, he assumed that the Jews or the Israelites believed in the Shabbat because the God of Israel got tired of the creation.
You know,
he could never understand that the cessation of the creation was the Sabbath, and for God wanted his creation to enjoy life,
right.
not to destroy life.
And more importantly, not just enjoy life, to rest and reflect on the relationship that they could achieve with the Creator.
Absolutely.
That the seventh day is a celebration of our relationship.
Correct.
No concept of that, because Allah is a mean, fearsome, wannabe God.
Yes, because he spends most of his time watching people being tortured in hell.
That's correct. So the no matter where we turn, what we find is that the Quran, rather than confirming Yahweh's Torah, is the antithesis of it. In fact, next it says, you know, you shouldn't make a practice of adultery. Was Muhammad an adulterer? Are all Muslim men adulterers?
Yes, they're serial adulterers.
Right.
Serial.
In fact, next Yahweh says you should not make a habit of killing. But all good Muslims are mass murderers.
But
Muhammad
was
a mass murderer.
Muslim. In fact, that's the whole point. A good Muslim is a jihadi Muslim.
Right.
And the so-called moderate Muslim is not even a Muslim.
Yeah.
He's a kafir.
You know, Yahweh says you should not make a habit of stealing. What does the Quran say in the 8th surah?
Steal.
Steal. It's lawful and good.
Yes,
right. What
yes.
the Yahweh etched, you should not bear false witness. What does the Quran say in the 9th surah about the witness of a Muslim?
Yes.
Not binding, right?
You can only take the Muslim word, but you cannot take the word of anybody who is not a Muslim, like a Jew or a Christian
right.
or a Hindu.
Right. That a Muslim's vow with a non-Muslim is not binding on the Muslim, right?
Correct.
Right. In fact, yes. Doesn't the Quran say that Allah disavowed his vows and that Muhammad did as well?
Of course. Right. Well, Muhammad and Allah are one and the same, so it doesn't make any difference, does it?
Yeah. Doesn't Yahweh say, you know, you shouldn't make a habit of coveting? And isn't the entire concept of the criminal enterprise that has become Islam nothing but coveting what belongs to others?
Absolutely. Muhammad, after all, he coveted the wife of his own adopted son
yeah.
and forced him to divorce her so that he can rape her.
Right. Coveted every other man's wife that he came in contact with, coveted his best friend's daughter, coveted everybody else's possessions, enslaved them, kidnapped them. Yeah.
This is Muhammad and this is Islam. You can't separate them.
They are equal. Islam equals Muhammad. And Muhammad was perverse and perverted. Despicable.